Welcome to Weekly Beats, the podcast in which two guys give you their perspective on the week in music. My name is Charlie.
My name is Mark.
And this week on the show, we are digging into one of the biggest albums of the year so far, I'll say. I don't know. It's Justin Timberlake. It's Man of the Woods. This has been a long time coming. It's been like 4 or 5 years since 2020 Experience, so certainly many JT fans eagerly anticipating this release here. And Mark and I sure have a lot of thoughts on that. So many that it might take us longer than usual to cover this thing. We'll see how it goes. If we've got time afterward, I think we'll talk about the latest Billboard Hot 100 chart topper, which belongs to Drake this week. It's God's plan for Drake to just keep turning out numbers ones. Right, Mark? He just can't stop.
He's like a calculator, how he turns out those numbers ones.
How's he like a calculator? Like he just keeps like pressing the one and then like just keeps showing one?
Yeah, he just keeps hitting 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Then he hits C, E. And then he hits C because he's not sure which is the right one. And then he hits one more.
Yeah. We might talk a little bit else about what else you've been listening to. So it looks like another stuffed episode here for us today, Mark. We got lots to talk about.
We like to fill our pizza with a little stuffing in the crust here at Weekly Beats.
Have you seen the new pizza that allows you to get a bacon stuffed crust pizza?
I've seen it on television, but I'm afraid if I saw it in person, I would collapse.
Right. There comes a point, I think, when like pizza is so good already, like nothing you could do would make pizza better than what it is, you know?
Right.
It's like all the extra dressing on top of it just ruins the flavor.
Yeah, you know what? That's a hot take I totally agree with, is that there's totally ways to ruin a pizza. Like, all respect to weirdo pizza people. Like, people are like, anchovies on pizza is my jam. Like, you know, you do your thing. But, like, everything pizzas, which is like, here's all the veggies and meats. That's just a soggy cheese mess. It's terrible, especially if you got thin bread.
I really dislike broccoli on pizza. I love a good piece of broccoli. I enjoy it, but man, not on a pizza.
It's too chewy.
Yeah. The texture is not right.
Yeah.
Green peppers. I'll do green peppers in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Mushrooms. Oh, I love mushrooms on pizza.
Totally. I'm not a mushroom person myself, but I do like a good veggie pizza. So sometimes I put up with the mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So, you
know. A little pepperoni, a little bit of sausage.
A little bit of sauce.
A little sauce, of course you gotta have the sauce.
Best part of the pizza is the sauce. I like a little pink
sauce,
a little purple and pink touching on my pizza slice.
And that space right between the purple and the pink is honestly, Mark, it's so good I could worship there. It's so good.
No, I just smash them. I just bash them together.
Put them together. Well, that's a nice segue, Mark, to talk about an unholy mess of an album. It's Man of the Woods by Justin Timberlake. This thing has been eagerly awaited, was, you know, unspooled slowly on social media through a series of cryptic tweets and videos and singles, all leading up to a Super Bowl halftime performance that was, what's a word to describe that performance? It happened. It was there.
Yeah.
We witnessed it.
I didn't watch it.
Okay, I witnessed it.
You bore witness to that.
I bore witness to that event. I can honestly say that Justin Timberlake did perform at the halftime show. Janet Jackson was not present.
That's kind of an amazing story too, that her entire career is forever like cut down by just one accidental part of a nipple, and like he just totally fine, just walked out of there like whatevs, man. I got a disco ball to smash after this.
Well, the real tragedy is that he thought he could release an album like this and find success. Man of the Woods, it's no surprise. Most folks are really hating on this thing pretty hard. Most reviews I've seen have been middle of the road to not so great, with a few Rolling Stone articles out there maybe saying that this thing is actually good. I tend to disagree with that. But I'll say also, I'm not necessarily a JT fanboy here. Wasn't super into his previous stuff. He always felt to me like a pop star that was like right on the cusp of getting it right for me. You know, I'm certainly a fan of my Lords, my Ariana Grandes, my Beyoncés. You know, I can jam to some pop music, but there was never really a moment where I felt like, yes, this is good pop music with Justin Timberlake. I don't know if you felt the same way.
I completely fail to understand why Justin Timberlake has been, like, given this pop deity status. I don't get it.
Well, where did you stand on, like, NSYNC back in the day as a young boy growing up, listening to these boy bands out there? Were you a Backstreet Boys fan?
No.
Not at all?
Not even a single song.
Really? So if I played one for you right now, you wouldn't, like, know all the words and sing along and dance to it?
I would know all the words. I would not sing along, but I wouldn't dance. I would cringe. And you might mistake that for dancing, but really, it's just my inability to handle cultural movements that I'm not related to.
Okay. Well, Justin Timberlake has come out here with his next solo album, Man of the Woods. It's an interesting approach to a solo album because he seemed to be veering a hard right into folk and, I don't know, going for like a Bon Iver, Justin Vernon kind of thing. And what ends up happening is like the album cover suggests, he's like split in half, where one side of him is rustic and woodsy and the other half is still concerned with commercial pop sound that's popular in the year 2018. And the end result is a truly horrific Frankenstein's monster that contains, I think, at least three songs that need to be in contention for worst song of the year when this year is all said and done. It's mind-boggling how awful this thing is. And, you know, that great opener to that Pitchfork review where they said, this review or this album makes us question if Justin Timberlake was ever that good. The same effect that Arcade Fire's Everything Now had on me to go back and like question the band's entire discography, like, are they actually that good, is taking place here with Timberlake and Man of the Woods.
I find that really interesting because I don't understand that fascination with him. Like, the 2020 experience, like, put both parts together, it's like almost 3 hours. The album art is him in front of like
at the eye doctor
because it's a 2020 experience, like, and then people at the time are like, this is so clever, and I don't understand it. Like, Sexy Back, like, I've always thought that thing sounded like garbage. It's like produced, it's like this subpar Drop It Like It's Hot song. I don't understand why people turn around on him. I've always felt like his sound, some reason or another, is 10 years behind every other major pop artist. And I think it's still true. He just made another one, but for some reason people don't have the patience because he's more flamboyantly, like, idiotic with his lyrics than before, which I feel like before he was pretty standard. So maybe that's what it is. This is terrible, though. I agree with you. It's a very bad album.
Yeah, it's real bad. In the past, Mark, you and I have done what we call Trackmasters, where we run through this thing front to back, taking each track piece by piece. There are a ton of tracks on this thing. It's over an hour long. I don't know that we maybe need to get into every single one of these things, but I think at least for the first half here, almost all of these are worth spending some time with. Namely, the opener, the lead-off single here, Filthy, the way he announced Man of the Woods to the public at large. And it's bizarre because for someone that is trying to sell himself now as a man of the woods, Filthy couldn't sound less like a man of the woods. This is like Look What You Made Me Do 2.0, with choruses that have no musicality to them whatsoever. Awful production that's like indulging in some tropey dubstep stuff that sounds garbage, like it's 10 years old. Really bad lyrics. And I think the running theme I'm going to have with a lot of these songs on this album is that idea of the Frankenstein monster. You know, pop albums are not created by individuals anymore. They're created by a talented team of experts who can mathematically calculate the right way to get the people dancing. And nowhere, I think, has that been more obvious recently than with these songs on this album, because from pre-chorus to chorus to bridge, all of the movements on each of these songs feel so distinct and separate and non-cohesive that it's like we just reached into a grab bag and pulled some pieces out and stuck them together.
again, but all those pieces are from about 10 years ago. Like,
yeah,
I thought it was the reason I wanted to review this last week. I said,
you
like,
put this evil on us.
I did. And I did it for a reason, because the first time I listened to the album in almost its entirety was in the background while I was doing something else. And I thought, it's so interesting to me that Justin Timberlake has made an album that is so dated feeling, and that like he's come out with this idea that it's going to be this interweaving of like this urban pop and this like country folk kind of aesthetic. And in reality, it just sounds like a bunch of old stuff kind of mishmashed. But, oh, that's really interesting. But like now having listened to this a couple more times the whole way through, like I am perfectly happy to just dunk on Justin Timberlake. It's not only are these songs like poorly rooted, like they're poorly constructed and considered, he also seems like a total dummy in them. So like in Filthy, okay, he's using dubstep in 2018. That's pretty funny. But on top of that, it's not just that he's using dubstep. The choruses are for a dubstep song. Like I like dubstep. Pretty good. Like the wubs are there, and he's kind of weird over top of them. He got this weird breathing undercurrent, like for Filthy, I guess he's getting hot and heavy. And then it cuts into this verse that is completely at odds with the chorus. Just this weird, like bright, shiny kind of funk pop. Then cutting it back to the dubstep song without any idea that these things aren't going to mix. Like, as if right. It was written by someone who just didn't know that. Like, they wrote the song, and they're like, yeah, this all fits. Like, there was no second consideration. Like, these seem like different songs. These seem, like, incoherent somehow.
And the fact that he never had, like, either the know-how or the intelligence to stop this record at some point and say, I don't think this is coming together right. I don't know right. that this is really sounding like something I want to put out on the airwaves. He's like, no, that sounds great. Like, that's the moment where, like, okay, does this really guy know what he's been doing? Yeah. Or is he just a puppet for other people to flex their creative muscles?
Yeah. And we'll get into it later. But, like, yeah. Whatever he's writing or whatever is being fed to him that he's not writing, that he's just being told to do, I have no idea what Justin Timberlake's recording and writing process looks like. I would wager to guess he doesn't know a lot about writing music. But there are tracks on here, like I said, we'll get into them later, but they feel like they're pulled, like the inspiration is primarily Kanye West from like 2004, like College Dropout. Mm. It's like crazy, yeah. But like almost presented again as if like, look at this bright new sound. We're gonna
cutting edge.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like Filthy is the most Filthy makes more sense on this album than anything. Like the fact that this track is so messy and weird and badly performed and it's the highlight of the album blows my mind. It starts at its best point. It's only downhill from here.
Yeah. The lyrics to Filthy include things like, haters gonna say it's fake, so real. Haters gonna say it's fake, so real. He's got a little bit where he says, I guess I got my swagger back. So a little shout out to Jay-Z from, what is that, like Watch the Throne days?
It's, yes.
About 10 years ago.
Yes.
Then my favorite bit is then he says, no, this ain't the clean version. When there's really no evocative lyrics or, like, no swears on this thing, like, there are plenty of other filthier tracks on this record, but he's concerned that this is the one that's not the clean version.
Yeah.
And the way he performs it, but saying, version, is so bad.
So many vocal affectation moments on this thing are worth talking about. So many moments where he just is produced weird. He's, like, way too clean for how bad he sounds.
Are you going to tell him to move to the Delta? Is that what you're going to say here?
No, it's not that affectation. Sometimes it's that affectation. But mostly it's like he's being this funk guy. Like a George Clinton guy. It's strange.
Yeah. So you mentioned one bit that you did like. Is that the part with like the baby, don't you mind if I do? Exactly what I like to do?
No, I don't like that. I like the wubs.
You like the James Bond opening.
No. Well, yeah, no, that's fine. I like that part okay. Like, when the album starts out that way, you're thinking, okay, this is really cheesy, but maybe this is okay. If he was just going to be weird on top of a dubstep track, I'd probably give this track a pass. It's the other stuff that's, like, starts to get confusing, and then it builds to something, and it stays around a long time.
Yeah, staying around a long time is certainly a theme we'll see throughout this album, and nowhere is that maybe more apparent than Midnight Summer Jam, the second track on this album. Filthy, I was kind of like you. I was like, okay, I know Filthy is not all that great, but it's sort of intriguing in a way that's like, I kind of want to see what this car crash looks like.
Yeah.
You know, like, how is he going to take this sound further? And Midnight Summer Jam was just like, oh, wow, okay, no, this is just a bad album.
We're going down, we're careening down a mountain.
Lyrically, it's all over the place. It's got this, like, weird up-tempo dance thing going on. The chorus is, it starts at midnight, 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 which he says four times every chorus, which comes, like, four or five times over the course of this thing. But for me, the highlight of this song is, like you said, where he becomes like a George Clinton like band leader. He's like, hey, this guy with the harmonica, give it to me. And the guy with the harmonica just goes, wah, 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 wah. And he's like, ooh, ah, chick it, yeah. And then he does again. And he's like, wah, 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 wah. Same thing. And he's like, I don't like it, I love it. And it keeps going again. It's like the exact same, just back and forth. There's no technique to it whatsoever. I guess he's never heard a harmonica before in his entire life, but that is really uncompelling harmonica playing. And then the song ends, music stops, and then there's another minute 45 outro of them just playing some music over the top of it.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Cut that out. Don't do that.
Okay, I have a theory. I'm going to introduce it now. The reason why, because I know, don't get me wrong, I know Justin Timberlake, all of his albums are needlessly long. I think that's bad. I complain about those too. But I think there's something happening here specifically where Justin Timberlake decided to write the most messed up version of The Life of Pablo ever recorded, where he's like, I saw what Kanye West did, his insane mashup thing. I'm going to do that, but in the South. And that's what happened. So I think that's why it lasts a long time, because he has no editor. He's just like, yeah, like this is a pop manifesto.
If we've learned anything, it's that when someone tries to replicate Kanye, it always goes badly. No one should ever try to do Kanye. It's dangerous. You'll hurt yourself.
There's a couple things too. You know, I hope this doesn't derail too much, but in Filthy, whenever he says haters gonna say it's fake, so real, that makes sense if you don't think about it. When you think about it, you start to ask questions like, what's fake? Who are the haters? What are you talking about? What is this song fake? Is your vibe fake? Like, right now, is the conversation you and I are having, Charlie, is that fake? Like, what is any of this in reference to? And one of my favorite ones on the whole album, when he just makes these proclamations that, like, feel like they mean something if you don't think about them, is in the beginning of Midnight Summer Jam. Whenever he says, don't act like South ain't the shit.
Yeah.
Who's complaining about the South? Like, what is he talking about? Who is he addressing?
I guess the North.
Right. Like, who? Doesn't he live in, like, Los Angeles? Like, what is he talking about?
No, he's from the South, Mark.
Okay.
He's a man of the woods.
Oh, I see. But who's saying that?
I'm guessing the North.
Like, the only, like, I guess there's, like, some cultural conversations, like, oh, everyone's racist in the South. But for the response to that to be, oh, don't act like the South ain't the shit, like, that doesn't help. This, I don't understand what he's saying. I don't understand what point he's making. I don't know who he's talking to. This whole album, I don't know who he's talking to, except for when he's talking to his wife, and then I get really uncomfortable.
I think this... I'm confused as to who the audience for this album is. I don't know, like, is he trying to bring in folks that like the folk music? Because it's not really here. Is he trying to appease his older fans? Because a lot of this is sounding so different from his older stuff, he probably is going to turn a lot of them off. I don't know who this is for.
Right.
Or who he's talking to. I love on the verse in that Midnight Summer Drams song where he says, even the old folks will come out and rock. We're just hoping the music don't stop till the next day.
Yeah, like all...
Even the old people are coming out to enjoy this music, Mark.
Are we sure about that? I don't trust Justin Timberlake. Justin Timberlake is an unreliable narrator.
Why is he unreliable? What makes him unreliable?
Because he is asserting things. It's like that idea that if you complain about something enough that doesn't exist, you'll make it real and people will complain about it too.
Yeah.
It's like that.
So he's like just stoking more violence. He's encouraging more like civil war, like hostilities between regions.
Well, I guess if you take what his whole vibe is into account leading up to this, including the music video, and his like idea for what this album should be, he said like, okay, well, the world is getting scary. There's a lot of cultural divisions. I know how I'll respond to this as an artist. I'll dress like a prepper. I'll write songs about being a prepper. I'll say that the South is where my allegiance lies. And then I'll go in the woods and have sex with my wife.
In my flannel shirt.
Oh, no, we're not there. We're not there yet.
We're not even close.
Can I make one more comment about Midnight Summer Jams, though, before we move on?
Yeah.
Is that this is going to be probably something we say a lot, but this idea of mixing folk music, country music, like Southern rock music with pop.
Bad idea.
Rural and urban. No, it's fine. Do it. But like mixing rural and urban spaces, great idea. But just writing a pop song and then saying, oh, throw a violin in there. Like, that's not enough. Like, that's not actually mixing those sounds. Just adding a single instrument or adding a harmonica, a harmonica-esque sound. It's not, that's not a careful mixing of cultures. That's just adding a thing to a pop song, you know?
Right. Okay, well, that brings us to track number 3, which is my first nominee for potential worst song of the year.
Hell yeah.
It's Sauce. I have to play it because there's no way to describe how awful the first, like, 30 seconds of this song are.
Juice is temporary. You know, anyone can obtain the juice or something. I mean, you could say that just because you got a nice car, I'm like, oh, man, you got the juice, you know. It's something that kind of comes and goes. Sauce is forever.
Sauce. You got all of it.
Take me through your thought process, Mark.
What is he talking about? What is this Sauce conversation? What are you saying to me?
Sauce. Sauce is forever, Mark.
What does that mean? Juice is temporary. What is that? What is Charlie? I'm asking you. I'm demanding answers. What does he mean?
I don't know. If you got the juice, it's like, okay, you got the juice, you know. But the sauce is forever, baby.
I refuse to accept what you've just done as an answer. That's not an answer. What is Sauce?
You'll really appreciate this. I noticed that Justin Timberlake is now selling a specific piece of merchandise that correlates with each one of his songs from this album. So if you're interested, you can buy the Sauce Flask on his website right now that has the word Sauce written on it.
How much is it?
Probably like $35. I don't know.
It's like $300. It's forever.
Sauce is forever.
And
baby.
You just drink straight duck sauce out of that thing. You just put a full flask of duck sauce. You go fishing and you just get into it.
Well, whenever I'm at a loss for words, I like to go onto my old pal's Rap Genius and find out exactly what it means.
Oh, thank God.
According to Rap Genius, this vocal opening is from a skit sampled from a viral Twitter video posted in June 2017, which a Best Buy employee explained the difference between having the juice and having the sauce.
Juice is temporary. You know, anyone can obtain the juice or something. I mean, you could say that just because you got a nice car, so I'm like, oh, man, you got the juice, you know. It's something that kind of comes and goes. Sauce is forever. You buy you a Simply Lemonade. How long is that going to last in your fridge? A couple days, maybe? Yeah. That's a juice. How long does barbecue sauce last in your fridge? A while. That's the sauce, man. It sticks around. It's thick. It's hard to move. I'm telling you. That's the difference.
This is real shit. Okay, you couldn't see the video, Mark, but it's literally a guy in a Best Buy employee uniform standing on the floor talking to someone who's videotaping him on their phone.
I could hear the Best Buy uniform. I could hear the Best Buy. I could hear the uniform. I got it all in my head.
Why would he put that on an album?
Because this is his
Why would
like
he make
Pablo.
A song about that? There's no song there.
He wants to do Life of Pablo. Like, Kanye found that video of the kid praising Jesus. He's like, oh, this is going to fit perfectly with my religious album. And Justin Timberlake is like, I like sauce. He found that clip, and he's like, this works perfect. Now I'm going to write about my penis. It's purple.
I love your pink. You like my purple. I like that he says, you like my purple. Like, he's not like, I don't really love it.
I didn't catch that.
This line reminds the strawberry bubblegum's verse from the 2020 experience, which says, if you'll be my strawberry bubblegum, I'll be your blueberry lollipop.
Oh.
It's a sex reference.
Yeah, of course it is. He's talking about his... Yeah. So that's one of the grossest metaphors for sex I have
horrifyingly
ever...
awful.
And
of
it's
all the stuff that we heard Cupcake say on her album like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Nothing compared to this. I was horribly aghast at those lyrics. And Cupcake just let me like, yeah, she's got it. She's in there. Because she sells it.
Yeah.
Justin Timberlake is not the person to say this kind of thing. And the way he says, you like my purple. It's like,
so
oh,
bad.
Man, I hate it. I hate everything about it.
And you know what's funny, Charlie, is it's arguably only the second worst instance of that on this album.
Yeah.
Ugh. That is so, that, like, if a child, you know, like, sometimes a kid accidentally overhears an adult say something, and, like, they repeat it, and it's like, oh, no, don't say that. Like, that's how I feel about Justin Timberlake. He's like, he opened up a health textbook, and he's like, oh, purple. Purple.
Yeah, you can get the sauce flask. Trying to...
He sounds like Professor Oak in Pokemon Snap.
What do you mean?
I like your purple.
Wonderful. You were close.
You know, musically too, there's this talk boxy kind of thing happening with like the guitar in the background that sounds just terrible.
Yeah, it's horrible.
That's a really good impression of the Seinfeld theme. Thank you.
Thank you. It's not listing the price of the sauce flask, unfortunately.
It's priceless.
You're right. It is.
It sounds like a child's song, this song.
Ooh, $250.
$250?
For the sauce flask.
Oh, God. I'll keep my soy sauce in a packet, thanks.
I think it's horrific. Horrifically performed, horrifically written. The instrumentation is horrific. The inclusion of a meme video at the beginning is horrific.
And again, like, not just lyrically, like, musically, it sounds like a child made it. Like, it's something about it to me. His vocals, he's doing that thing where he's, like, just sounding weird. Like, it's going to be sexy for him to sound kind of like, there's like a lot of light in his voice and he's moving around a lot, you know, like he's just like he's making himself sound goofy. But whenever you're referring to genitals like that, it just doesn't, you don't have the charisma necessary to make that not sound really weird and off-putting. And the funk of this is like the worst funk song I've ever heard. This is like a terrible funk song.
Yep. It's really bad. It's going to be one of the worst songs of the year. I'm saying it right now.
I completely agree.
To be right up there. You wait. The Beatsies will come around, and it's getting all its accolades. We're moving into Man of the Woods, the next song, the title track here. And this thing also opens terribly.
Yep.
Listen to how bad the opening of this thing is.
I brag about you to anyone outside, but I'm a man of the woods. It's my pride. Sorry, baby, you know I try, but I'm a man of the woods, it's my pride.
The way he's got that, just like, it's like already failing. Like, there's no energy to like make a sound. It's like, there it is, I'm a man in the woods.
It's like his car battery's dying.
Right. Like, I get they're kind of going for an effect, and maybe it would sound okay in context elsewhere, but opening with that sound is just like you're giving up from the first second. Like, I don't even have the energy to provide a meaningful sound to start things off here.
But don't worry. And it's accompanied by this. Dum 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 dum. You got that backing you up, so you're good.
Classic chord change right there. Mark, have you seen Inside Llewyn Davis?
No.
So in Inside Llewyn Davis, Justin Timberlake plays an aspiring folk musician. And there's a sequence where he and Oscar Isaac and Adam Driver all sit down to record a song together. And it's magical. It's fantastic. And it's got a nice folk charm to it. And it feels totally authentic. And it's a really great moment. And Justin Timberlake is a key part of that scene. You know, mm-hmm. I will not deny that the guy has a talent. You know, I think he's maybe even a better actor than he is a performer. So there's a chance, there's a world in which if he goes full on folk here, I think it could work. And I think there are maybe glimpses of that inside songs like Man of the Woods. I don't know that it's where it needs to be or even anywhere close, but he could have done something that worked in this genre, but he like can't commit to it or is afraid of alienating other fans. And so he ends up literally, like I said, being torn in half between these two places. Lyrically on here, he's equally awful. When he says something, fingers walking down your legs, said, there's the faucet.
Oh, yeah. That's the other line. That's what I'm waiting to hit that moment.
Yeah. It's bad.
I got it
bad.
Written down. Would you like to hear it now or do you want to continue? Because you were on kind of a roll.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Here's the line. Let's throw it out there. Just like, let's have the talk. Okay. This is, in my opinion, one of just the clumsiest, maybe the most clumsily written line about sex I have heard in a song, maybe ever. Hands walking, fingers, or hands talking, fingers walking down your legs. Hey, here's the faucet. Now, is that because she pees? Like, that's the only thing that I can think it is. Why else would he call it a faucet? Also, just like, you know, I don't know. It's also confusing gender-wise what he's saying about his wife, that she has a faucet.
Yeah. Do you consider the faucet to be a male?
It's phallic.
Utility? Yeah. There's that faucet I love.
Oh, I love this faucet. You don't want
that
me in your bathroom.
Urinating penis.
You don't want me in your bathroom. You don't want me overusing your bathroom.
I also love that he's like, I brag about you to anyone outside. What is that lyric? Anyone outside, I'm gonna brag to them.
You're just walking, you're taking a nice stroll through the woods, huh? Is that a man screaming at me out
the
window?
Hey, it's my wife over here, look at her.
Oh, she's naked.
Her name is Jessica Biel. She was on Seventh Heaven. It was a big deal in the 90s.
Okay, I'm 59. Don't keep up with it.
Hey, you want to buy my sauce flask? It's $240.
Absolutely not. I'm gonna have my dog, my dog pooped.
Did he poop out his faucet?
Yep. Well, I'll be seeing a neighbor.
All right, bye.
Why is there no sitcom about Justin Timberlake in the woods?
Coming this fall, CBS, Justin Timberlake is lost.
I had sex with my wife several times today.
He's going to make a bunch of songs about camping out by his lonesome.
I'm out here.
Turns out he really misses his wife.
When my husband is gone, I picture his skin flayed
I'm
fresh.
I'm inside him wearing his skin. We're not there yet. We can't go that far.
Cut
yet.
To CBS logo.
Higher, higher.
No. Because I want to.
Okay. There's more.
I want to make a point about Man of the Woods is that you made a point that we can even talk about this at any point in this album. I don't think he could ever be a good folk musician. And I think there's a good reason for that. Like, I think, and I'm using what you said as proof of this. I don't think there has ever been a great folk artist, talking absolutes here, but I don't think there's ever been a great folk artist who was not also a great lyricist, because folk music is so, it's like rap, it's so heavily predicated on having few tools at your disposal, only enough to tell the bare minimum musically to tell a story. And there is no chance. I just can't see anything in Justin Timberlake's work in his entire career that indicates to me he would be able to hold himself together lyrically with nothing to back him up. And, you know, maybe a Chris Stapleton would come in and, like, at least polish him up, but...
At least say something, Chris Stapleton.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I want to make that point.
Okay, that's fair. I'll give you that. Any thoughts on Higher, Higher, or Wave?
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting song, Higher, Higher, because it's got kind of like an Isley Brothers thing. Like, I think the hook is okay, actually. Mm-hmm. But it, again, it's just all overlaid with his falsetto kind of vocals. And they're just so close to, like, being hilarious. You know?
Yeah.
Like, they're so close to being, like, Lonely Island making fun of Justin Timberlake.
Right.
It completely derails the song. And, oh, and his... Could you play a clip of that? Because I think the repetition, the rhythm of his vocal part is, like, objectively frustrating to listen to. It just sticks. It's like da-da-da-da. It, like, sticks in one spot for the whole thing.
Yeah. That was a good harmony there. We did a nice job with that.
We nailed it.
I do like the bit a little bit further on. That feels more classic to me. Yeah. I kind of like the sound of that, but like you said, the rest of the track is not good enough to take it.
Yeah, I think that, like, that hook too, it's like generic, but it's effective, yeah, for sure.
But it feels kind of static. It doesn't really move anywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to ride that wave.
You have any notes for Wave? We took notes.
Yeah, I really don't. This is one that was just kind of like on there.
I have notes for Wave. Okay. So the first is about the rhythm, because the song has kind of a weird rhythm to it. And my best attempt to describe it was Island Supermarket Funk.
Oh, nice.
Can you give me a shot? I don't even remember why I said that. Oh, Jesus.
Sounds like Beck in the background there going, wait.
Sounds like wait. The CD is skipping.
Yeah, no, that's all straight.
I also have a lyric.
Yeah.
It's about how he says he doesn't have a phone, but he doesn't need it because he has Waves.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you get that? That's what's he saying?
Is this his attempt at doing Kanye West's song Waves?
Perhaps. It was on Life of Pablo.
You're right. Now the other wave.
But, yeah, I don't know. The only thing I had to say about it is just more, like, first of all, really strange song, strange rhythm. Like, you kind of run past it because at this point you've been battered by the album to not expect,
yeah,
like, anything tonally consistent. But it is a weird song. That's a weird track. And the lyrics
just not as weird as some of the previous stuff that's come so far.
Yeah, it's more palatable, and the lyrics are a little more high school revelatory, but there's nothing super offensive about it. So it's like a moment of respite in a circle of hell.
A moment of respite before the end of the world on a track called Supplies.
Supplies!
He's doing his, like, Migos thing on this thing.
Yeah, I have a note here in all caps that just says corrupt future. I think.
I mean, the only way it's a corrupt future is he keeps selling his garbage stuff through his pop-up shops.
True. I think I meant the artist future. Like, if you put future into the computer and he got corrupted.
I got you.
You come out with Supplies.
He says the world could end now. We'll be living in The Walking Dead.
And I'm living like, in The Walking Dead.
It's not a place I want to live. I don't want to live in The Walking Dead. I hate that show.
Yeah, show does suck. So, which raises a question, because he also, there's another mention of his wife, he says he gives her orgasms multiple times.
The multiple times!
That's a really good impression. I like that a whole bunch. That was spot on.
I'm wondering, like, is he not getting any? Because he sings about sex a whole
lot
on this record.
That's a good point. He's constantly bragging about his wife.
Yeah. And I mean, hey, you know, you're a superstar. You're still with Jessica Biel. You have a lovely child together. You know, do your thing. Granted, we're outside, so he's going to brag to everyone. But it just does feel a little bit gross whenever he keeps talking about all the ways they have crazy sex all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of hope if you're in a long enough term relationship, you got like a good sexual chemistry going.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean when I'm walking my dog, you need to lean out the window and tell me about it.
The multiple times.
Like, are we supposed to listen to that and go like, wow, he's great at sex.
He got multiple times. So good. He has to have like 18 layers of his own voice over top. That's like exploded out lyrically.
Like he's Miguel.
Yeah.
Or Prince.
No, not even close.
Okay.
Even Prince, I don't think like sang about it in this kind of way. Like it was always like subtext to his songs.
What about the woman who masturbated in a lobby?
Well, yeah, that's the one that's explicit. But on that, like, Purple Rain as a whole, like, there's not a lot of moments that are explicitly, like... There's a whole lot of purple on that Prince album. At no point does purple sound as gross as it does on this album.
Well, wait till you learn what Purple Rain is a metaphor for.
And oh, no. Oh, no. You're ruining Prince.
It's his faucet. Sorry. Didn't mean to reveal it. Purple Rain Out My Faucet was the original title of Purple Rain.
It didn't get as much airplay. It didn't pass the previews.
Right. Yeah. Also,
when
okay.
He says he's got. Okay, you go first.
I just want to ask a question because this is probably we're going to segue to the same thing. Is this a song about the apocalypse or having sex with your wife? You've constantly were running into the same wall. You continue to write completely different lyrics about completely different subjects without tying them in. And it's not like a Fight Club holding hands at the end of the world thing. You're just separately bringing up things. What are we talking about here? Is this The Walking Dead or is this sex with your wife?
I think it's the second one because like when he says he's got supplies, like is he like, I got a doomsday bunker in my backyard, and it's going to be great for the two of us to live together.
He's a generator. Right? Like, he says he's like a backup generator that you pull him, and it'll keep you on or whatever.
I'll be the generator, turn me on, Mark.
No.
I'll be the wood when you need heat.
Oh, no, I forgot about that one. That one's real bad.
Oh, man.
Living in the Walking Dead. Just terrible sounding. Like, did you hear that part and laugh? When I hear him say
a little bit, yeah.
It's hilarious to me. And an adult that made that decision.
I think the chorus is more laughable. Supplying.
Like, what a horrible metaphor for being good at sex is that you have supplies for when people kill each other. It's so weird.
I don't know.
Also, right, kind of gross that he's rich. So, like, the idea is I'm rich enough that I don't have to deal with the apocalypse. I have a bunker, and we'll just have sex while the world ends, and it'll be fine because we can afford that.
We're getting the sweet spot here, Mark.
Yeah,
how about Morning Light? Anything with the Alicia Keys feature?
Oh, yeah, definitely. My first note for Morning Light is just the F word. This is the song that... I wrote it here. This is a song that reminded me of Kanye West in 2004. It's got the same kind of like re-sampling of like 70s soul, but in a very like understated way, with some like chip tune or some like auto-tune kind of chipper like vocals. And it's crazy to me that that would be his forward-thinking thing. It's always 10 years behind. What about you?
Yeah, this is maybe another one that gets... forgotten inside of supplies and say something and flannel. Like there's a lot going on right here on this album, and maybe one that kind of slides through. Even Alicia Keys's feature, I don't know, is all that noticeable.
Well, there is something. Her feature, the first verse, I believe, of her feature, right before you get into the part where she says she loves her husband, is almost a perfect recreation of how I feel listening to Man of the Woods.
Okay, let's see if we can find it.
thoughts you're putting in my head. So I say to myself, I don't even wanna try. Yeah, every part of me is paralyzed.
It's just really sleepy and slow, and for an album that's been so abrasive and in your face about its terribleness, I guess I get lost in this track forgetting it because it's not openly offensive in the way that so many other tracks are.
Again, yeah, it's like a checkpoint in a marathon.
It's so long. I'm exhausted.
It's almost 2 hours. But yeah, do you see all those lyrics? Like when I listen to Man in the Woods, I don't want to get out of bed. I think, why am I trying? If this is what's popular, why do I even try? But I just stay in bed.
Every part of me is paralyzed.
Yeah. That's all I had for it.
All right. Well, let's talk about Chris Stapleton coming back on the show.
Yes.
On Say Something.
I have things to say about Say Something.
All right. Well, Say Something, Mark. Say Something. Say Something.
What's the song about?
I don't want to get caught up in the rhythm of it.
You didn't.
You can't help. You can't help himself.
You couldn't. All of these are true. You couldn't get caught in the rhythm. You couldn't find the rhythm. You couldn't help it because that's just who you are. These are all just true criticisms.
Here's what I'll say. You know I'm a fan of Chris Stapleton.
Yes.
You know I'm a fan of his authentic
beard,
vocal performances, his beard, his getting on the guitar and telling you some heartfelt stuff. And I got to tell you, there is a part of me that thinks this might be the closest thing to the best song on the album. Mm-hmm. However, there is literally no substance to the song whatsoever. Yeah. This song is about nothing. It is composed of nothing. If they're just saying something, like, that's it. Just say something. Say it. Like, all they're doing is saying something. They're not saying anything at all. They can't help themselves because they have to make an album with 17 tracks that's over an hour long.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's trying to like commentate on like political stuff and saying like, oh, everyone's got to say something this day and age. We all got our platforms for being vocal and I can't help myself. But yeah. Then he also goes in and say sometimes the best way to say something is to say nothing at all. So it's like saying like, don't speak up about problems in the world. Don't talk about stuff because that'll solve all our problems. I don't like that at all. I don't think it sounds like Chris Stapleton to be that kind of voice.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't even know what the song is about, man.
It's really hard. I thought about this song more than any song because it's the one that most clearly is about right now. Like, it's the one that, of all of the commentary about him being a doomsday prepper, this is the only one that seems to be about something. And but what's ironic is it's a song about nothing. It's like a perfect art piece. It's like an Andy Warhol painting. Like, I am fascinated with Say Something. It's the most ironic song ever written.
There are very few annotations for the song, but for the post-chorus, the Rap Genius lyrics say, maybe I'm looking something I can't have. And the annotation is, the full line is, maybe I'm looking for something I can't have.
That's our substance.
Earlier in the chorus, it says, the use of the word rhythm can also suggest that he can't help but make music, as well as the use of, still in my heart, there's melody and harmony. Either way, he wants to express himself somehow.
Yeah. That's not, I don't understand that interpretation. That seems even more useless than what the song
Jason
is.
Pollock. Everybody that says something says something.
Wait, is that really what he said? Can you read that?
Everybody again? Say something that says something.
That's like that's the guy who works at Best Buy who said that. Sauce.
When you hear a song you love, you can't help but get into the song. Or as Justin says, caught up in the rhythm of it.
So is it more likely that this is a song about social media? Or is it a song, like, okay, on which end of social media? Is he like one of these people, like, sharing those, like, alpha male right-wing people who are like, young people are weak and too coddled. Is he one of them? He's like, well, I see all my liberal friends type and stuff, and sometimes you just got to say nothing. Or is he, like, on the other end, or he's like, a lot of people on here are racist, but sometimes you just stop talking to them. Like, it's confusing. Is it not about that at all? Is it about something completely different? It's a completely blank map.
In the grand scheme of marketability, hey, if he's not specific enough, he gets to attract all the audiences.
Exactly. But he... it's not like if it was just a generic song like Stand Up for Yourself, it would be that. But it's has this layer of complexity because he says the greatest way to say something is not to say anything. And then that's immediately followed by, but I can't help myself. So, like,
yeah,
what?
He undercuts that message.
He disproves his own conceit literally the second he makes it. It's kind of incredible.
It's a shame because I think this is a good moment for Chris Stapleton to come in and lead the charge and maybe get some more people on that bandwagon. But, yeah. Man, this is just, it's unfulfilling. It's just, it's like it's just hanging out in some space, never progressing anywhere and not saying anything at all. It's musical purgatory.
It's like a Rorschach test. Like if you listen to it, you can feel 100 different ways that all are completely about you.
And not wrong.
Yeah. There's no...
It's a fascinating track.
It's I honestly like thinking about it. I think everything about it sucks. I think even adding Chris Stapleton, who I concede is, even though it's a music scene I am not usually privy to liking, I concede that he writes some really solid stuff. Like, he clearly knows how to produce a good country record, and I have to give it up. But at the same time, this is not his... He's not commanding the ship. So he probably there's a pretty good Chris Stapleton, some good Chris Stapleton guitar work that is just overlaid with all this other bullshit from Justin Timberlake that just, yeah. It's like an anchor. It devalues that for me. And I would easily put this in like my bottom four from this album because it's so inept.
Yeah. I was like reaching to try to make this one track from this thing that I would take with
so
me, but I couldn't even do that.
Oh, amazing. What an amazing thing.
What an accomplishment. He really did it.
I thought more about Say Something because there's nothing to think about than like any other song this year. Like straight up.
Wow. You really have to try to write a song like that. It's not easy to say nothing at all.
It's not. Sometimes it's the best way to say something is by saying nothing. He's right. This is an amazing song. It's art. Oh my God. This album is a nightmare that I can't wake up from.
We're halfway through it, Mark.
This is crazy. Oh, we're about to get, even worse.
Let's play it.
Under his shirt, it feels like
oh.
his skin off mine. And the little holes and tears and shreds on it are...
From where I stabbed him, skinning him alive.
The memories of the past, Mark. This is the trailer for Under the Skin, by the way. This is Scarlett Johansson's character speaking about hunting Scottish men and taking them back to her black place and devouring them.
Yeah. This is the part where we don't get to see. It's the deleted scene.
Yes. Thanks, Jessica Biel.
Nobody else knows.
That's so scary.
It makes me feel like a woman. It makes me feel sexy. That makes me feel like I'm his. I'm his.
I'm his. I'm his.
And it makes me feel like a woman. It makes me feel sexy. I love that.
It makes
I love
me feel
it.
Like I'm his.
I'm just wearing his skin, you know, walking around inside of him. It makes me feel good.
Okay. I tried to make sense of this song, and I'm like, okay, if I were describing hers to someone who hadn't listened to it, how would I describe it? So I thought to myself, well, I guess I would say hers is a song in which a woman wears a shirt. And I thought, well, it's not really just that, so I'll add something to it. Hers is a song in which a woman wears a shirt because it makes her feel like she's wearing Justin Timberlake's skin. I'm like, okay.
That sounds like a lot of his fans.
Yeah, kind of, probably. We're getting there. And then the final addendum is that it makes her feel like a woman to wear Justin Timberlake's skin. It's a confusing song.
It's so bizarre. It's... Oh, I don't get it.
She compares it to wearing a skin and then mentions all of the shreds and holes in it, which is so vicious.
she's the zombie. We are already in The Walking Dead, and she's wearing the zombified skin of JT's corpse.
Maybe, like, all of this stuff is accurate to his relationship with Jessica Biel. Like, maybe the living in The Walking Dead thing is how they get it done.
It's already happening. Well, the interlude serves as a wonderful intro into a song that is so atrociously awful that it is on the level of Flag on the Can of last year. I'm saying it right now.
Oh, for sure.
This is Flag on the Can level garbage songwriting here. We gotta let it speak for itself. It's Flannel, baby.
When a father's love is doing you wrong, when a mother's love won't bring you home.
He wrote an unironic song about how nice his flannel shirt is. Yeah, if like someone's like, I want to do a parody album of like folk music. Yeah. I'm going to sing a love song about my flannel shirt. And it's like the Flight of the Conchords or like whatever, you know, someone coming up with that kind of idea. No, this is totally approached unironically with the most heartwarming emotion exhibited on the entirety of the album. Yep. And it's about a shirt.
In my left pocket.
That is where you'll feel my soul. It's been with me many winters. Okay, George R.R. Martin, like, what's going on here? Talking about the White Walkers coming down.
Like, literally, you can hear what happened. Is that Justin Timberlake, way after the fact, bought that first Fleet Foxes album and thought, oh, that's dope. And then he made a song about his shirt. That's I would put actual money down that that's how the song was written.
Once again, if you are not the Fleet Foxes, don't try to do the Fleet Foxes.
Never. Even Father John Misty does not do that. He was in the Fleet Foxes.
Yes, you're right. I got to get the genius annotations for this. He says, right behind my left pocket, the opening two lines. This is referencing a flannel shirt. JT's left breast pocket is aligned with his heart. Physiologically speaking, the stimulation of the heart organ can often result from emotional impulses. Figuratively, the heart and soul are typically in sync, and you'll find both behind JT's flannel pocket. Many winters is used here to represent the hardships and endeavors that Justin has overcome through the strength within his soul. He is passing along this emotional tool so that his lover will find solace in her own times of suffering.
Oh. I mean, can I also add, like, there's something really specific and intimate about in a relationship in which you wear the other person's clothes because you're close enough with them to do that. Like, that is something that I think is not a super explored space, but a very real one that, you know, anyone who's been in any relationship probably has felt that very specific kind of intimacy. It's like worth writing a song about that. But if you couldn't have really boned it up any harder than this. Like, you couldn't have made a series of worse decisions to do that than with flannel.
When he ends each verse with the line, and I'll be there with my flannel on.
That's like, what?
Oh, the flannel. I got to read this one annotation because it's great. This is for the verse. Now I know I could never sit in his chair and that missing love left you bare. But if I'm being selfish, that gave me a reason to be there with my flannel on. It says, this part has many meanings going on at the same time. On the previous lines, Justin references both mother and father love. Now he admits he can't sit on the father's chair. Justin means that he can't fill the void that this lack of love has left on this person. But at the same time, this void is what gravitates Justin towards this person. Is Justin talking about a girlfriend? Or is he talking about his own mother? And in Freudian terms, ... does it matter?
Wow. I like genius. Genius is fun. I like genius.
Thanks, genius. Nothing is better than at the very end when they're like outroing. And like he like solos over the top. It like, ooh, here's my flannel. I gotta find it because it's amazing. Here's my flannel.
That's a Lonely Island lyric.
It is. It seriously is. But it's performed completely unironically.
There's another moment on here that I just the scratch of my head, literally. Like I'm trying to figure out, to the best of my ability, what he's talking about. I'm going to start before it gets weird. Starts with, you see, I've been down that road before, and I wouldn't dare say that my hurt was more, but a little spitfire hurt you, boy, with nothing to lean on. That's pretty standard stuff, right?
Yeah.
But then it gets into this, and I got really confused. It's bound to go down after a couple empty cans, and I knew once I saw that fancy record company man, and in her face she knew I was a stan, I was leaving with my flannel on. I'm sure, like, those lyrics aren't accurate.
What does that mean, anything?
Yeah, but what is he talking about? Like, listening to them, I couldn't decipher what he means.
He's bound to write bad lyrics after a couple cans go down.
That's true. That's what he's talking about.
I wonder if there's a flag on that can, Mark.
Oh, then he loves America. I'll tell you that much.
No annotation for that lyric on Rap Genius, because no one else knows what it means.
It's so confusing. It's like a religious text. It needs to be deciphered. And who is this? So, like, okay, I'm having a panic attack. Hers is about how wearing Justin Timberlake's flannel makes her feel like a woman. And then the song is about giving the flannel to his son. Is that right?
I don't know.
So, what does that have to do with the record company? Oh, he's saying, like, I'm real. Like, that guy wore a suit. He doesn't exist. I wear flannel, and I live off the land.
You're Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
We know who you are. You can't just pull this all of a sudden. It's been 20 years since you came on the scene.
You were an NSYNC, you dumbass.
We have pictures of you wearing a giant denim suit with a cowboy hat. With Britney Spears wearing the same thing back in, like, 2000.
The guy from Blink 182 who believes aliens existed and came down and are harvesting people made fun of you, and we all thought, he seems more relatable. That's how little relatable you are.
It's a long time back from 17.
You're telling me.
Flannel is awful.
Also, more in this track of, like, the bass that's just like dum 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 dum. It's like this song sounds like the song is a person, and that person is an idiot. Just walking down the street without a care in the world, stumbling into things, knocking over trash cans, talking about flannel.
That's a blurb for the front of this album, right there. This song sounds like a person, and that person is an idiot.
It's bound to go down after a couple empty cans. No one knows better than the drunk who just asked for directions where he just was.
Oh, man. Well, is it the worst song in the album? I think I'm quick to say it probably is.
Charlie, I'm going to make a big claim. I think Flannel is one of the dumbest songs I've ever heard in any decade, any genre. It is stupid.
All right, so what we really got to do here is that if we're coming to the end of the decade, we got to have, like, a battle royale, worst song of the decade, this versus Flag on the Can, like, each year as the dumbest song.
100 really bad PUBG players with no network connection whatsoever all represent a different song.
Oh, man. Flannel's doing well. It's in the lead. But here comes Flag on the Can to make you question your patriotism.
Wow, Flannel's driving around that dune buggy in circles. He still hasn't gotten out of the circle. He's just surviving. This is incredible.
He's really living off the land.
There you go. You did it.
We got 5 more songs to get through. From here on out, this is like all the other songs that he just named, like, things about nature. Because, like, at one point, Montana is next on the list here, but when we got to Breeze Off the Pond, and it opens like this. I was like, oh my god, shut up. Like, you cannot possibly be serious right now.
What I wrote for Montana is for the very intro. Could you just play the first, like, 3 seconds? Just stop there. I just went, the woodsy sounds of Montana.
Wide open sky country.
There you go. That's just how I remember it. But I think it's funny though, because the last, like, 5 songs on here are all innocuous. Like, if this whole album was Montana and that other Living Off the Land, other songs you just named, actually living off the land is pretty bad. But if they all sound like Montana, people would just think, oh, that's a bad album. And they would forget about it. It would just get some normal scores. People say, ah, it was a bad one. And then they would move on like, ah, stupid moment in pop. I think even
instead,
if the album had opened with Montana and like the other stuff was hidden in the back end, you know, like it's yeah. weird that this passable, boring stuff is just like thrown in the back. Like, here's the trash. And it's the only stuff that's serviceable.
Yeah, I give you that.
Like breeze off the pond, or trees on the lawn.
Hate it, hate it, hate it.
Hate it, hate it.
What about Living Off the Land?
I have a note here that Living Off the Land is the most disingenuous song in the history of pop. That's an exaggeration, but it's got to be in the top like 100 songs that are clearly a lie. It's like frustrating that he is this, like you said, we've seen him for decades. You can't escape Justin Timberlake. He's everywhere. This rich, privileged guy who's just stupidly magooing his way through the world. And
magooing. I love that verb.
What is he doing? Oh, Charlie, what is this album but a series of magoo moments? Tell me that. And to hear him try to sell himself as living off the land,
farmer.
As a farmer, is so, I would say it's hilarious.
I break my back, I work all night. At times I do all their work too. Don't break my stride, I just keep moving forward. At times I wish there was two.
If it wasn't so, like, deceitful, it would be funny. But it makes me mad. Living Off the Land is a frustrating track for me.
I'm trying to place that sample.
Yeah.
Yep, yep, yep.
Oh, I'll give you the place. It was New York City in 2005.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You got it. Living Off the Land.
It was the songs that we thought were cheesy in the 2000s because they were overplayed that he has decided in 2018. Ooh, that's hot. I'm Justin Timberlake.
Hot, hot, hot. He then proceeds to make a poorly advised analogy about life and love being the hard stuff, and he wants the hard stuff, not the weak stuff. Give me that hard stuff, Mark.
I hate it. I hate it. But I want to just, in case anyone thinks I was too harsh, can I read a lyric?
Yes.
I'll be down. Sometimes it's hard to back up the bills on the credit card. She keeps on running to leave. If you don't get on your knees and repay the money you spent, but like her trust, you cannot admit. Sunday you go to church, back on your knees, and you're trying to soul search. Singing, I'm just a man doing the best that I can. It's from Living Off Land, obviously, but first of all, he's using debt, like actual financial debt, as a metaphor for being a shitty boyfriend, which sucks. Just as a metaphor.
Corporate hellscape.
Yeah. Corporate hellscape 2018, America. Wake up, sheeple. This is the richest man in America has just told you that, oh, I know, it's hard paying your bills, right? Like, this sucks. Justin Timberlake sucks. I don't get Justin Timberlake. This is the worst. This album is a dookie, but not in the Green Day way.
I was gonna say, don't insult Dookie.
I won't insult Dookie.
I love that thing.
This is Revolution Radio Green Day.
Okay.
Dookie. It feels like I just pooped. Like it's like having talked about this.
You just released something you've been holding on to for an entire week.
Yeah, it felt good.
Oh man, we got two more songs, Mark. We gotta cover the hard stuff.
So give me the hard stuff.
3 seconds in already of like, oh, rolling my eyes.
Give me the hard stuff.
I don't want any good things. I want only the bad things, because that's when you were.
I could tell. I listened to your album. I could tell. Is there any surprise that the man who wrote Man in the Woods wants no good stuff?
He is a man of the woods, Mark. It's his pride.
Oh, pride, too. Saying pride. There's like weird words, code words. I don't like this. It makes me nervous for reasons I don't understand. This is like in Get Out. Like, he's like he's like one of the people at the party in Get Out. Like, there's something about him you can't put your finger on, but you know something's there. You know something he's in the living room and you walk upstairs and he glances up with everybody else in the room. There's something off with this guy.
Well, I mean, if you want to get political, you could make the statement that says, like, he's been trying to co-opt the black affectation for the past two decades.
True
enough.
You
want to make it more like Get Out and say, like, oh, I want your moves, I want your voice.
No, he's wrote songs about sex in the future.
Oh, yeah. Future Sex Love Sounds.
Future Sex Love Sounds, and everyone's like, genius.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-
Baby.
Yeah.
Hate it. And he's got this like Lion King celebration music playing in the background, like it's Mufasa come back from the grave. All these pop stars putting their babies' voices on their records got to stop right now.
Except for DJ Khaled.
True. And Beyonce. That's it.
Hey, Daddy. Daddy. Daddy.
Yeah, that's Daddy.
Ha.
I love you, Daddy.
Hey, Daddy.
Sweet boy.
I hate it.
I'm wearing Daddy's skin.
We're all inside Daddy's skin now.
I feel like a woman. I'm his.
It makes me feel sexy. It makes me feel like a woman.
Also, like, the family values aspect of this album is there, which is weird. There's a moment where he talks about being a boy. He's like, I think it's in that song, isn't it? He's like, you're going to break hearts. That's what we do. That's what boys do. Which is fine. You know, whatever. Nothing wrong with that. But, like, there's this real old-fashioned sensibility to the album where his wife is saying, like, I'm his. Like, I'm his thing.
Property.
Yeah. And he's saying, like, and you break hearts, and, like, you know, sometimes you don't say things. It's like, there's something. Man, I'm having a
say
get-out
moment. Say
something,
JT. Say something.
Get out. I'm saying to America, listen to this album, get out. Jordan, peel out of there. Jordan, peel out of there and get out.
Why didn't he call that movie that? Get Out's pretty generic. Why didn't you call it Jordan Peele Out of There?
Peele Out of There would be amazing.
Or like, if he called it Jordan Peele's Out of There.
Yeah. I saw a conversation. People are saying there should be Get Out 2. I think it's terrible. But if it's a sequel starring Jordan Peele called Peele Out of There, I'm on board for it.
All right. So there we are. It's Man of the Woods. We did it.
So I'm taking Filthy. I'm taking... Living off the land.
Hers.
Oh, I'm taking Hers and that's it. That's what I liked.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I did spend quite some time trying to think, like, is there one song on this thing that I can slap on a playlist and call it an album? And the answer is no. There's an hour plus of material on here, and there is not one single song that I think belongs on a best tracks list for 2018.
I agree. I would hate the idea of listening to my year playlist and then stumbling upon Justin Timberlake. It would be a huge mood killer.
Well, let's flush this toilet together, Mark, and say goodbye to this album and hope we never have to encounter it again.
Oh, we don't. Hey, America is the land of the free, my friend.
All right.
I'm a prepper. You can do whatever you want. I'm your generator. Turn me on.
All right. That's Man of the Woods. That's Justin Timberlake. Don't listen to it unless you already did, in which case I'm sorry. I think we'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that new Drake single that's taking over the charts. So stay tuned.
Now
Alrighty, we are back and ready to get into the latest offering for the Billboard Hot 100. It's Drake. It's God's plan, Mark. God's plan that he's going to keep turning out albums for the rest of every year forever.
You're too harsh on Drake.
I probably am.
I like Drake. I like that last album a whole lot.
Well, shall we get into this pool in Toronto?
Yeah, let's hit up the six.
He's got 500 million downloads for Passion Fruit.
That's an amazing... Well, that's not amazing. That's a good song, though.
500 million!
That's a good song.
I can't even fathom that much.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. God's plan is 203 million, so...
Oh, it sucks. I see.
Here we go.
I've been moving calm, don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful is a struggle for me. Don't pull up at 6 a.m. to cuddle with me. You know how I like it when you loving on me. I don't want to die for them to miss me. Yes, I see the things that they wish.
That's a Drake song.
Yeah, that's for sure a Drake song. I gotta admit, I wasn't sold on the, like, merry-go-round beat until the drums kicked in. I actually did sell
yes.
me on it.
I will agree with you. That kick-in is pretty good
yep.
right at the very end there.
At first, I'm like, what is this, Silent Hill? But then it turns out I'm just riding on a merry-go-round with Drake.
This is a feel-good track that discusses his future. Being who he is in the industry, he knows that people will want him to fail, but God won't let him do that. Another key subject of the song is the separation that Drake feels that he needs to have from those outside of his inner circle. Anyone who tries to work their way into his life must have an ulterior motive to benefit themselves. The official music video shared a different sentiment, though, as Drake took the budget for the video, a whopping $996,000, and gave it away to family, schools, charities, and more.
Drake did that?
Apparently he did.
Drake's just a good guy, man.
Yeah.
I was thinking a lot. This is going to be a conversation full of stereotypes for sure. But I was watching the Olympics. And Charlie, I'm sure you were too.
Of course. We're in Olympic season right now. It's hard to avoid it.
Yeah. And would you want to? I wouldn't want to.
Of course not.
The Olympics are some of my favorite things to do in a year. And I was watching the U.S., the women's U.S. versus Canada hockey match.
Oh, tough match, man.
Real tough match.
Brutal, physical.
Yes. But you know what, Charlie? I didn't catch the whole thing because unfortunately I was kind of watching it right after work and ran in. Yeah. It was a weird time. But I saw something that I couldn't help but reinforce my stereotypes, which was American players were pretty aggressive. One of them got a penalty, very rightly, very obvious penalty, sat down in the box, was angry, and put a towel over the camera so mm-hmm. you couldn't get a shot of her. Mm-hmm. And then the Canadian coach was talking with team members in the box, and they were having a polite conversation. Like, they were laughing. They were having a good time. And I was just like, man, what a cultural difference this is. This is crazy to watch.
Yeah.
And I feel that way about Drake. I feel that way about, like, if you compare our AAA rap artists, like Kendrick is like the world's rap artist. He's royalty. But like
royalty.
Exactly. But if you compare Kanye to Drake, who I think are like the Kanye's the other superstar, right? Like the
yeah.
transcends boundaries, like really big cultural difference between the two. I think that represents each country pretty specifically.
That's interesting. I might like to explore that comparison a bit more.
Yeah.
Although Drake has squashed his major beefs, he's no stranger to conflict. Most notably, he beefed with Philadelphia rapper Meek Mill in 2015 over claims that he didn't write his own songs. Drake responded to these allegations with diss tracks. Drake rapped a similar bar during his verse on Lil Wayne's Family Feud.
Drake is much better than Lil Wayne.
Yeah. He says, "Don't pull up at 6 a.m. to cuddle with me." Drake doesn't want to be a booty call in the middle of the night. He's worth the whole night. Aubrey has echoed similar sentiments on his 2007 mixtape Deep Cut, Don't You Have a Man. Six also has correlations to Toronto, Ontario, Canada, where Drake grew up and holds ties to. The nickname The Six comes from the six boroughs that make up Toronto.
That's true. Drake easily bested Meek Mills in that fight. There's no question.
Yeah. The Rap Genius annotation did say that he easily won.
It's like not even a question. Like I actually get why some people are in the Meek Mill camp, because Meek Mill's much harder and he writes way tougher stuff. Like he seems more of the classic rap personality. But mm-hmm. it's almost an objective thing that Drake won. Like Meek Mill seemed like a fool, like pretty much the entire time. He just kept getting underhanded over and over.
Yeah. Since God is the central theme of the song, Drake could also be comparing the 12 apostles and Jesus Christ to his OVO crew members and himself. As Jesus Christ's most devout disciples, the 12 apostles were tasked with spreading the gospel of Jesus after his death. Drake has not shied away from deifying himself, using the alias Six God in past tracks, such as Six God and Ten Bands.
Yeah.
If he happens to die, and somebody outlives him and his crew, they can tell you who Drake was behind closed doors much better than what outside sources write up. That's where they're going to tell the story. It was different with me comes from.
Drake.
Jesus.
If we say that enough times, we can indoctrinate anyone.
Drazes. Drake Jesus. Jesus.
Drake Jesus.
It's pretty close. It's pretty close.
Hope I got some brothers that outlive me. They going to tell the story. Shit was different with me. God's plan. God's plan. I hold back sometimes I won't. Yeah. I feel good sometimes I don't. Yeah. I finesse down Western Road. Yeah. Might go down to GOD. Yeah. I go hard on Southside G. Yeah. I make sure that Northside E.
Okay. It'd be getting a little stagnant for me.
Yeah, he's definitely has that sort of easy. I don't know.
Easy E vibe.
No, not, definitely not. Easy E is just like,
I'm living up in Toronto, guys.
holy moly. That was really crazy. I did not expect to hear that out of you. Can you do that again?
No, it was a one time only thing.
That just escaped through you.
His spirit entered my body.
Damn. All right. I don't know if I can. That threw me for a loop.
He says he might go down a G-O-D. Yeah, wait. Drake seems fixated on the idea that death will immortalize him. He mentioned the same idea in the first verse of this song, but it's clearly been on his mind for a while. He rapped about it on 2015's Legend. He says, if I die, I'm a legend.
But if I live, then I'll be the
I'm a god.
Villain that I live long enough to see.
Let me just quote Kanye West, who once said, I am a god. Featuring God.
Again, okay, look at the disparity. He's quoting Bible verses. Kanye West is just saying, I am God, and featuring God. Think about it. And that's the other thing, is that, like, Jesus is still kind of amazing, though.
Yeah, you're right. I'll take Jesus over this any day.
Yeah, but you never know. Maybe the next verse in this is going to cut into the craziest nonsense you've ever heard.
Maybe, but probably not. Let's see.
And still, bad things. It's a lot of bad things that they wish and they wish and they wish and they wish and they wish on me. Bad things. It's a lot of bad things that they wish and they wish and they wish and they wish and they wish on me. Yeah. Hey, hey. She say, "Do you love me?" I tell her only.
Sorry to cut you out there, Drake.
Shut up. Shut up, Drake.
Shut up, guy. Shut up.
Guy, shut up.
Shut up.
Oh, I read a crazy story about... wait, what's his name?
Drake?
No. Like, Lou Reed.
Oh, okay.
He did that fake Nickelback thing. Like,
what do you mean?
He went during one of his shows, and the only reason I know this is because Neil Gaiman wrote an article about Lou Reed. He was like really like Lou Reed, I guess. Lou Reed once opened a show saying, I need to tune, and people were like cheering when he came out. And he said, stop yelling. I need to hear my instrument. Stop yelling. And they played the song, like, he played the show, and he says, "You guys wouldn't stop yelling when I was tuning the instruments. You're the worst audience I've had. I'm not playing you an encore." And he didn't. He just left. He just walked out. Everyone was waiting for the encore. It didn't happen.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Look at this photograph. Shut up!
One thing I like about Drake a lot is how easy he is to listen to. Like, he's got a melancholy... his verses come at you fast, but because they're so relaxed, it's almost deceitful, like how much he's doing. But he's always smooth. Like, it's rare for me, at least, to hear a Drake verse that sounds clunky or out of place. It's always goes down smooth. He might not reach like super highs like a lot of other people in the genre right now, but he is super good at being listenable.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why he's received such a widespread listenership.
Yeah. You know,
that's why everyone's got the Drake vibes going on. And I think a lot of what's popular right now stems back to his rise in popularity.
Sure.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten more like Drake parody songs. You know, I feel like his style is very easily parodyable.
Right.
Where he's like, you know, he's got a little bit of like filtering over that, a little bit of fuzz.
Right.
And that's it.
That's it. I won't have any more.
I'll throw in a couple. Yeah. And that's it. That's Drake. Well, I'll tell you that Drake has already had a long history of conflicts. Chris Brown, who allegedly fought Drake in a bar, he's publicly defended Meek Mill over legal issues. These lines are likely referencing the ongoing beef between Drake and rapper Joe Budden on the other Scary Hour song, Diplomatic Immunity. Drake throws shots at Joe when he raps. It's complex, like short people, round, tall ladies. I gotta watch who I'm talking to like it's all ages. I've seen Budden careers turn to sit around and talk about other careers, judging their peers. Knowledge from those who did not contribute to none of this here.
You know what's interesting about those disses, though, that I think also speaks to something about Drake, is his he has the sort of, like, I'm an alpha, tough male exterior of all of his peers, but none of his personality or how he presents himself or disses other artists on his tracks is based in violence, which is not like rap is not what it used to be. Like, it's not filled with that anymore, but it's still a lot of it just like casual references to shooting someone in the face for being rude. Like,
yeah,
Drake,
yeah,
never takes that road, I think, which also helps his popularity. So it's like, even when he's in a feud like that, you're still getting a pretty clean diss.
For sure. All right, let's keep going.
Partly I only love my bed and my mom, I'm sorry. 50 dub, I even got it tatted on me. 81, they'll bring the crashers to the party. And you know me, turn the 02 into the 03, dog. Without 40 Ollie, there be no me. Imagine if I never met the broskies. God's plan, God's plan. I can't do this on my own. Hey, no. Someone
watching, they watching.
I think there's something to be said about the fact that we can't generate a ton of talk about this, though.
Yeah, it's just pretty stagnant. Like when the drums came in, but then it's kind of hitting that spot and just staying there.
Yeah, I like all of this, but none of it produces a lot of thought in me.
Right. The O2 is a reference to an entertainment complex in southeast London, the O2, which is a capacity of 20,000 people. Behind Manchester Arena, the O2 is the second largest indoor venue in the United Kingdom in terms of capacity.
Wow.
Drake is saying that so many people come to the O2 to see him that it becomes the O3.
That's how that works.
In continuance with the basketball references, Drake Rhapsody turns the 0-2, a two-pointer, into an 0-3, a three-pointer. Drake always does it bigger and better when it comes to his music. No, it's oxygen and ozone.
Is that you saying that?
Yeah, they didn't get that. 0-2 is oxygen.
Oh, wow, you're right. That's like 0-3
is ozone, like the atmosphere. So we're like gonna take the party that's down here and blow it up to outer space.
See, he's smarter than you think.
He's smarter than the genius people give him credit for. But we knew that. I'm the genius. I got the microphone.
This is my
I own you.
This is my favorite segment of Weekly Beats. Charlie's I'm the Genius.
I am God. Featuring God.
I'm a genius.
Featuring genius.
If genius was a hive mind, it would be my favorite hive mind. If it was like a Star Trek, like Borg type enemy, it'd be totally useless.
There's a shot of all of the OVO folks wearing their sweatshirts with that owl on it, and they're all sitting together like it's like a family Christmas album.
That's fun. But back to my Borg theory. If genius was the Borg, it would be a series of generically trendy young people all wearing the same shirt, all with Bitmojis, all just explaining that things are buildings and that artists wrote a song, and just like really base level things, just like a species of people just wandering around towns and just telling people things that everyone knows. Like, did you know that the song where he's like,
ended because of some reason,
right? He says he stands tall like a tree because trees are sturdy. Okay. Well, goodbye. And they fly off back to their planet where they just talk about the weather.
That's what you want out of your genius.
No, that's what I want out of my Douglas Adams for Millennials trilogy I'm writing.
Oh, nice. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Earth.
You don't bring a towel. You bring an iPad. I hate myself.
Oh, I hate it. All right, well, let's keep going. Been this shit close, yeah, close. I've been me since Scarlet Road, ay, road, ay. Might go down as G-O-D, yeah, wait. I go hard on Southside G, ay, wait. I make sure that Northside E, yeah. And still. Bad things, it's a lot of bad things that they wishing and wishing and wishing and wishing they wishing on me. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
His phone rang. Okay, here's an interesting thing. Here's an interesting debate we could have, although I'm not sure either of us are equipped to have it. I feel like Eminem has a lot of crossover appeal, honestly, because there's a lot of, I think, like nervous white young people who want to listen to
like
rap.
Like to assault women?
Was Eminem accused of that?
No, but he sings a lot about assaulting women in his songs.
Does he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I have avoided Eminem my entire life.
It's really misogynistic.
Wow. I actually didn't know that. That's crazy. Are you joking? Is that true?
No, I'm deadly serious here. I wouldn't make that up.
Why are you laughing? It's confusing me.
Something else came to my mind, and I was thinking about it.
Well, what came to your mind?
No, that's not appropriate for the podcast.
Oh my God. Should you clarify that it's not related to Eminem's proclivities?
Not at all related to Eminem's interests, no.
Okay. Just like, yeah, Eminem writes songs about beating women, and then you like giggle to yourself.
There's no good time to laugh at that kind of humor, Mark.
Okay. interesting revelation, but... yeah, I think that there are a lot of people who are like freaked out by the N-word in music. And so like teens who are like nervous by that stuff, especially like when I went to high school, were like, no, Eminem's really the good rapper.
Yeah.
Not to say he's good or bad. I'm just saying I think that was part of the reason. So
because he's white.
Yeah, like that's kind of it. There's a certain element of his whiteness that allows for a crossover appeal. And Drake now has sort of a similar crossover appeal where, like, my mom can enjoy Hotline Bling. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. Who is better, in your opinion? Who is the better artist?
Ooh, that's tough. I mean, Eminem's been real bad lately. Like,
true. I've heard that.
He's been rotten. But, like, peak Eminem stuff, I love that stuff.
You like hearing about spaghetti.
Absolutely. I love Slim Shady. I think that Eminem has a wit to his works that Drake does not have. I think Drake has a marketability sense. Like, he's good at, like, business stuff and, you know, corporate hellscape. Here's my brand.
Totally.
Worship my brand. Eminem doesn't have that. I think... it should be no question that Eminem is a far more skilled rapper than Drake is.
You think
Drake
so?
Drake Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Of course. It's like that big of a disparity.
Yeah, like it's not even a question. I think Drake is a mediocre rapper at best.
Okay. Now that I disagree with.
Okay.
I not that he's better or worse, because I know so little about Eminem, but I don't think he's mediocre.
I bet if you were to look up like the things that you think are Eminem or Drake's best lyrics, rap wise, I bet they were written by somebody else.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, the best Kanye tracks often have little to do with Kanye West. That's kind of par for the course, right?
I disagree. My favorite Kanye track is I Love Kanye, because I do.
That was all Kanye. Yeah. No one else decided, like, hey, Kanye, I got a great idea.
And I love you like Kanye loves Kanye.
Look out, Kanye. La La loves Kanye.
La La loves Kanye.
Drunk Kanye should be the next album.
Well, look at the previous two albums. I mean, what have you been missing?
Where not should I be? And all should I... Did you see that Instagram video? I'll put it in the song. I'll take a phone call.
I don't care.
Bad things. It's a lot of bad things that they wish and 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 on me. Yeah.
Is it not over yet?
No, we got 19 more seconds to go.
Crap.
It's a bit stale.
I'll concede that beat does stale over time. I'll give you that.
I mean, this is like the modern thing to do, though, right? You just hit a space and it's easy. That's why they can turn out these songs so quickly, because it takes 2 seconds to make the beat.
Okay, old man.
I mean, I don't want to be that person, but that's what it sounds like to me. God's plan. Wishing.
Okay, here's something interesting for the Eminem Drake thing is the mom spaghetti meme was unintentional, because that was funny. It was an internet thing. But talking about, you mentioned Drake's good brand sense. He turned himself into a meme with that music video. Probably
Hotline Bling.
Yeah, probably pretty intentionally, right?
Yeah, probably.
Drake seems like he's on top of things.
I think everything he does is very calculated.
Is that bad inherently? To
No, but you lose the authenticity.
You think Drake is inauthentic somehow?
Sometimes?
I'm just going to keep throwing the questions back
here. I don't know. Sometimes he just doesn't quite open up to me the way I want him to, you know? We'll go out, we'll have a nice time together, and he'll still be so jaded, and he won't really... Tell me what he's feeling, what his heart is thinking.
You want him to give you his flannel.
That's what I need.
No, please. I don't want to remember, actually, the song.
Kill it.
It's like the thing.
Well, there we have it.
We finished our merry-go-round ride with Drake.
It was kind of a slow merry-go-round.
It was a slow merry-go-round, and at the end I was like, hey.
We didn't really go anywhere. I'm a little bit dizzy.
We were really going to do two of these. And Jake.
Hey, I'm Jake from Toronto.
Oh, I thought I was hanging out with Drake today.
Let me sell you some insurance.
Well, I thought we were going to do this music video.
Hey, do you guys like hockey?
I think hockey's okay. I'm not really a big hockey fan, but...
Get Out.
The movie?
Featuring Jordan Peele.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. And that's how Jake from State Farm got created.
Are you taking the track, Mark?
Is it from this year?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, I'm taking it.
All right, I'm going to say no.
Oh, you're such a muzzle mouth.
I just don't vibe with it. It's just not for me.
I like riding the merry-go-round with Drake, even if I wish it was shorter.
That's the way it is with most merry-go-round rides. Like, you get like 60% of the way through, you're like, all right, enough of this. I'm not really having a good time, and I'm starting to feel sick in my stomach.
The longer I sit on this, the more I'm aware I'm a grown man on a fake horse, and I really feel the need to get off this thing.
Yeah. All right. I understand you have a lot more stuff to get into, Mark.
Yeah, I've been having trouble lately, like, with my bowels, and I've needed to tell someone about it. No.
I'm here for you.
No, I don't want to talk about that. I got albums to talk about, Charlie. I want to wash away the bad taste of Justin Timberlake, and for you, Justin Timber Drake, with some good albums.
Timber Jake.
Well, just Jake. Justin Jake. Jakeston.
Justin Chimber Jake.
Justin Chimber Jake. My Monster Hunter Palico is named. That'd be a dope ass Palico name.
Justin Chimber Jake.
Meow. Okay. I got some good stuff to talk about, my friend. Let's wash away the bad taste. I'm just going to name my favorite things. There's some good albums released in the last few weeks here. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you may remember I became briefly obsessed with a, I believe, Swedish artist. I'm probably getting that wrong. I'm American. Everything in the world is just like five countries to me. Artist Shit Kid. Who released an album last year with a fake band called the No More LAs, which was a like take on Los Angeles culture. She sings in English, although that's clearly not her native language. She has released an EP following that called This Is It, that is her at her most.
Ooh, this is it.
This is our time. This is it. There's so many good songs called This Is It. And she has added it to the pantheon. By being more accessible and more relatable. She is an acidic kind of punk garage artist who is now writing songs about how she feels when she's alone in her apartment. And I just want to play some of these for you, man, because there, I think this might be a thing that you could join me on this journey with.
Okay. This is my way into Shit Kid.
It's the sentence I love hearing you say. especially if there's a comma. Okay. This is the track Oh Me, I'm Never, which is, I think, her maybe sharpest song she's ever written, the most tightly constructed song she's ever written. Here we go.
Like I said, it wasn't all that great.
What do you think?
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Totally different
That's
vibe, right?
Good. Yeah, for sure.
And it, again, there's some like translation things happening. There's a just like some phrasing, like everything makes sense. More so than Justin Timberlake, I'll say that. But there's like some phrasing things. Like there's a moment later in the song where she says, "There's nothing." She talks about she's sick and weak from doing nothing. She's got nothing on her mind yet everything at once, which like, I really, really dig the message of that, that feeling of you're not doing anything, but you feel just totally stressed out. Very relatable. But written kind of oddly, here's another track where it's just like casual garage rock, which is something you don't get a lot of. It's called All My Fears. I'm loving this thing.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Right? Do you get that casual nature of that? Isn't that kind of amazing? All right. There's something else, though. This is a special thing that I've been so excited to do on this show, which was I've been listening to a lot of music on Bandcamp.
Oh, wow.
And
like SpongeCore?
Just SpongeCore. I've been listening to a lot of SpongeCore recently on Bandcamp. Oh, man. I wish I could remember any of Patrick's quotes.
The inner machinations of my mind are an enigma.
Okay. Here's the thing. Listening to music on Bandcamp means you get to read the, like, press releases.
Yeah.
And it turns out, I don't know if she's releasing these independently or if she's with a label. I haven't investigated Shit Kid that far. But I can tell you...
I'm surprised you haven't, if I'm going to be honest. I'm surprised you haven't.
Because I'm a goddamn lunatic.
You are. You lost your mind over this lady back in the Best Of episodes.
I did. I think that she is...
It was unhealthy.
One of the only punk artists worth caring about.
Wow! That's a big statement.
This year.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say, well, the only punk artists worth caring about ever.
No, I think there's like... honestly, most of the art coming out that says it's punk is... just reclaiming old statements. Like, I like Priests a lot. I would count them as a good one, but there's not a ton of that. Wouldn't you agree? Like, there's like Revolution Radio or whatever by Green Day, but
right,
that's pretty bad. But anyway, I read the press release for Shit Kid, and it's, I wanted to learn a little bit. I learned everything about Shit Kid. None of it translated super. I want to take you on a journey. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. This is for the very first EP. This is what I find fascinating. Shit Kid is the project of 23-year-old Asa Söderqvist, based in Gothenburg, south of Sweden. Born in 1992 and growing up in the northern part of Sweden, which is confusing already. South of Sweden, in the northern part of Sweden, I'm confused. Asa was a shy kid, and in 2008, she moved away from home to study music, guitar, and singing for high school. Struggling with shyness and blackouts, whenever she tried to perform in front of an audience, she turned away from music in favor of boys and partying. After having her heart broken, she returned to music 16 years old, singing in a local band and self-medicating with beers before every performance. After high school, they moved to Gothenburg, and the band fell apart at the same time as she discovered feminism. Soon, she had started a feminist punk band with two friends playing in front of audiences in Gothenburg, but at the same time, Asa had also started to record on her own in home, recording on a half-broken computer while trying to learn her way around GarageBand, the program. She spent 2 months recording what would become her first recording as Shit Kid, using vocal effects to record guitar solo, and with tracks purely consisting of vocals and drums. Asa shared her works on SoundCloud in June 2015. As soon as the music was online, she turned away from it, focusing on acting and making the music for a short film series named Stargazer by Linda Herdstrom. 4 months later, she reached out to Stockholm label Punk Slim Recordings, the first fruit of the collaboration about Shit Kid's official debut single, Oh Please Be a Cocky Cool Kid, which was released on March 1st. That's a lot of information for a debut EP. Lot.
Holy cow, that's a lot.
How about the LP from last year? This is what I'm looking for. Okay, so do you remember the release I read from just a second ago? Recall it in your mind.
Yes, recalling.
Okay, here is from the LP from last year, Fish. Shit Kid is the project of 24-year-old Asel Söderqvist, who made her debut last spring with a self-titled debut EP, which quickly propelled her into being one of the most talked about new acts in Sweden. Originally from the north of Sweden, and then it just goes into the entire story again.
I mean, I guess if you weren't around for the first time, you got to make sure you know it.
Yeah, but they add in the things that happened in the meantime to the story.
Oh, nice. It's like the continuing story.
Yes, it's like a novel that's developing in front of our eyes. But with the same text.
Wow.
And it's really detailed. Like, it's over a page long. Anyway.
That's pretty cool. Thanks, Bandcamp.
That's one of the weirdest press releases I've read. I just wanted to throw that out there, that it just is growing.
Yeah. The continuing saga.
I can't wait. Next EP, we'll get to learn about all of the partying and boys. I listened to Good Evening, which is the debut by the electronic artist Night Jewel.
Ooh.
Do you like Night Jewel?
I am not familiar.
Oh. You said ooh, I thought maybe.
Just the name. Night Jewel.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like that name, which helps, maybe, but it's a really interesting debut. It's pretty slow. There's one song on this thing that is the illest chillest. It's called What Did He Say? Here's a hit of that for you. I'm not going to cut any further. It's a good debut, though. Listen to Yours to Keep, Albert Hammond Jr.'s debut album.
Yeah. How was that?
I was really surprised that it didn't sound just like the Strokes, to be honest.
Right.
Have you listened to this?
No, I've been meaning to, but I haven't gotten around to it.
It's really interesting. It's got like a childhood kind of edge, like a boyish kind of edge to it. Lyrically, it's I don't know. Lyrically, it's very straightforward. But here's a track off that LP. It's called In Transit. Tell me what you think.
It's not that far from being a Stroke song.
But it's got this flavor to it, right?
Yeah, it's more youthful.
Yeah.
More optimistic, less cynical.
Like the artwork indicates it will be that. It's like a field with bunnies on it.
Mm-hmm.
I left kind of feeling whatever about the experience as an LP, but there's like a few tracks on there I thought like, wow, like he definitely could develop an interesting voice on his own, separate from the Strokes.
There's a reason for his solo work to exist.
Yes. Yes.
Which is not something you can say about every member of Vampire Weekend.
That's sad. There's because we're talking mainly about one member of Vampire Weekend.
He ruined it. He ruined it.
Okay. Here's something from this year. It's a band called Awake But Still in Bed. Emo is back.
Yeah. Some would say it never left.
So I would also say that. And hey, this is a good emo album.
No kidding.
And I mean that. The album title, like any emo album title, it's like a long phrase and you're going to love it or hate it. I love it because it's so depressing in the way that emo just has got to be depressing. Let me give it to you. Okay. Awake But Still in Bed is the band, all one word. Album title: What people call low self-esteem is really just seeing yourself the way that other people see you.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great. But there's a real sense of urgency, real sense of, like, suburban angst. Like, emo is so good because it captures the screaming in your head you have to do when you feel comfortable but depressed. All right? So, here's the track Life. I think it's killer.
Okay.
I think her voice is pretty, will be divisive if you're not up for it, because she literally breaks her voice in every track. Like, she will scream to the point where it's not in tune with anything. It's just pure, like, rage.
Pure emotion.
Yeah, pure Hence comedy.
Oh, right.
It's a hilarious album.
Ha ha ha. That sounds cool. That sounds cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's got some like way sadder tracks, way lower energy, difficult tracks. I won't get into here, but actually, that this album was really great. I did not expect to enjoy an emo album this year. But if there's something to be plundered from that dead genre, I think this band has found it. I think this is their debut.
Cool.
Okay. There's two albums I'm super psyched about. This is a great time for music right now. It's a great couple weeks. More Disco Songs About Love by Deluxe, filled with bangers.
Yeah.
Yes, this album has got me energized because I enjoyed Deluxe before. I find them to be, sometimes they just find a groove and they just can't figure out what to do with it, so they just have it sit still on a bench. But man, lyrically, they write songs about being 25 and hardly being able to afford rent. I deeply relate. So the opening track of this thing is called $875, which is actually how much they pay in rent. That's their actual rent. And it's a song about not being able to afford it and hustling to get it. And it's kind of hilarious. Very real. I'm going to play you a clip of that. Listen close to these lyrics because there's something I really like in here.
Okay.
Did you catch that?
Most of it. Can you say it?
Oh, I can definitely say it because I've been thinking about this.
You have a tattooed on your body right now.
This is the house I could see myself dying in. Why can't I live in it then? Come on, just let me live in it. like a lot of little moments like that that are like humor out of just being a normal person that I just want to eat the Lux.
Mm-hmm.
And become them and wear their skin like a flannel. Oh, did okay. I just woke up. Did something just happen?
I don't know.
Here's the track, Music Snob. I cannot decipher if he can't keep his composure or if he forgot the words or if this is an affectation. I'll let you decide. It's a weird track. Here's the opening to Music Snob by Deluxe.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
like a jam.
Yeah, I actually ended up liking this thing a lot.
Cool. What's it called?
It's the band is Deluxe. The album is called More Disco Songs About Love, referencing the Talking Heads album More Songs About Buildings and Food, which is one of the greatest album titles of any album. He impersonates David Byrne a lot in this thing, which is like you kind of wish he would have a little bit more of his own voice, but there's something about the sort of like youthful indiscretion like element of Deluxe that I kind of forgive him because I'm kind of him. I listened to Slow Fade by Daniel Avery, kind of ambient electronic artist. It was a pretty good EP. Don't have a ton to say about it. Got some pretty interesting soundscapes. It's pretty good.
Okay.
Not a lot there though. I listened to Cosmic Crypt by Mammoth Grinder. It's
that sounds awesome. All of that sounds amazing.
Yeah, do you like that?
Cosmic Crypt by Mammoth Grinder. Yes, what do give me that.
What do you think it sounds like?
Some light jazz. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you nailed it. Here's the song Molotov. Tell me if this is what you were expecting.
Okay. Honestly, a little bit lighter than I was expecting it to be.
Yeah.
It's still pretty cool, though.
Yeah. It's got, like, simpler chords, kind of like simpler rock chords. I mean, like, it's still totally in the death metal thing, in my opinion, but...
Yeah. No, I think it's not just your opinion. I think it's pretty statistically accurate.
Metal people are weird, though, about that stuff. Like, I would listen to this on Bandcamp, and, like, the comments on it from their fans were like, I love how they infuse punk in their music. And I'm like, I don't hear that at all. It's totally outside my ears.
It's like whenever you're like a coffee aficionado and like it's all coffee, but like there's like subtle hints to the coffee flavor and it's like that's not real coffee, you know?
Totally. I'm all completely of the mind. Give me drip coffee. I don't care what it tastes like. I love it. Just put it in me.
Yep.
So maybe if that's how you feel about metal, you'll enjoy Mammoth Grinder. I thought it was okay.
It's a great name, if nothing else.
Yeah, Cosmic Crypt.
I like Mammoth Grinder more.
Better album title than band title. I'll give you that. Or artist title than band album title, whatever.
Yeah. You got it.
You get it. I listened to something I can't pronounce because it's all in Japanese by the artist Mux, who writes noise music with what sounds to me like Sega Genesis sounds.
Okay.
Some of this album is pretty standard, like pretty like easily understandable. Not a lot of noise. It's a very quick clip, so you can kind of hear what I mean when I say Sega Genesis. Kind of hear that?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Maybe it's Super Nintendo. I don't really know the difference between sound chips.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you.
One thing, there's a track in here called Redfield, which I'm convinced is just sounds from the Resident Evil PS1 game, the first one.
Okay. I probably couldn't help you out with that, but...
But, I don't know really who would know that. I don't. Here's what most of Muck sounds like, though. If you're expecting that to vary at all, here's 3 more minutes in this track. It's like interesting noise music because it forces you to consider music in a new way. And there's something kind of fun about the idea of listening to something broken, like music that someone made and then just broke it.
Right.
I can't say this.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's glitchy.
Definitely glitchy. Can't say it set me on fire, but there it is. Here's the last thing. Have you listened to Curtis Roach at all? Because you should listen to Curtis Roach, it turns out.
I can't say I have, no.
He's a 17-year-old rap artist.
Okay.
Just put out his debut, Frida. Just put out his debut LP this year. It is bossa nova rap music.
Okay.
Take a listen to this. This is like a Back to the Future moment. I'm holding up the phone. Take a listen to this.
Where you at? Where you from? Where you at? Where's your sign? Where you at? Where you from? What's your sign? Where my fly little divas at? Where my queens, where my chickas at? Apple bottom girl, you so needy, yeah. Cause you my freedom, yeah.
What are you feeling?
Like I'm just hanging out on a beach, drinking 2 or 3 martinis, just having a time with my boys.
Hell yes. Charlie? And okay, are you thinking
I'm a little bit not quite there all the way, you know? I'm a little bit, hey.
You're like, you're not good to drive, but you're not partied yet. Is that what you're saying?
But I'm ready to party.
I get that. Now, what's amazing about this album for me is that you might expect there to be a drop to kick in. But here's towards the end of the song.
Kiwi, yeah. You put my mind like a chitty, yeah. Picture perfect, girl, you want to see
it. It's like total restraint with that sound. Like he's just like totally like getting into it with that sound. And it's like part of a medley. There's like 6 tracks that are all in the style. Here's another one. Blossom.
Wake up and I organize my auras with chakras, bumping at Shaka Khan. All your flows fictional, same equivocal Comic Con. Ride the Autobahn, I'm at highway pace. I've been lost in time and space, trying to find my place.
17!
Wow.
That's amazing. This album is great. Yeah. Lyrically, you know, it lacks some diversity, but like this thing is, it's awesome. I had such a good time listening to Curtis Roach. He even has some like more traditional rap songs, but like he never gives up that like bossa nova relaxed, like Katamari Damacy flavor.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
So here's Anxiety, which is the most traditional track on the album, rap wise.
Feel like I'm lost in the universe, just a particle traveling in this space. My heart will go hyperactive whenever I see your face. I mentally feel displaced and I'm running off. Social anxiety got me fucking with none of y'all. What you running from?
Like still not quite giving that up. I loved it. I thought this album was excellent. Some of the most fun rap music I've heard in a good long time.
It's definitely original, which is something we've been needing.
Yes, and he's 17. I'm gonna be Charlie right now. He's 17.
Wow.
More
so young.
Restraint and flavor and such a unique quality than all of the artists who are much older, who have so much more money and experience under their belts than what Curtis Roach did. I think that's amazing.
Let's get some more of that up in here.
Hell yes. That was all my stuff. It was an epic one, but I had things I needed to get off my chest.
That was a whole lot. That sounds really good. I got to dig into some of that stuff this week.
Okay. What did you listen to?
I listened to Little Dark Age by MGMT.
How is that?
It's intriguing. I don't know that it's good. I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff on here. It's weird. It's a weird album. Here's a song, Me and Michael. There is just a weird accumulation of sounds on this thing. I want to see if I can get to the chorus so you can appreciate that. It's probably the standout track on the album for me.
I really like how that sounds.
Yeah, it's sort of a throwback to their old thing, but also not at all like anything they've done before. I can't even say I'm a huge MGMT fan, aside from liking those awesome singles off of Oracular Spectacular. There's like, here's the opener, She Works Out Too Much, which is also like weird. Like, I keep going back to it because I'm not quite sure where I stand on it yet. And even now, I'm not quite sure. There are aspects of it that I like a whole lot and others that I think are kind of bizarre and strange. It's really interesting. It's a hard right turn for a band that is, you know, not really settled on a specific style over the past decade. I don't know.
Yeah. By a hard right turn, you mean like an Alex Jones type turn?
Sure. Yeah. The alt right turn. Then just a couple singles real quick off albums that are probably coming out this year. Muse dropped a new single, Thought Contagion. So that's a Muse song, and it's pretty terrible.
You love Muse.
Yeah, I used to love Muse, man. Two albums ago, they really fell off the wagon hard. New Preoccupation single, Antidote. Man, this thing is getting better, Mark. We're getting to that warm, gooey center that we loved off that self-titled from Viet Cong. The drum beat in the song is fantastic and repetitive and punishing, and the whole album sounds like it's going to be out of someone's like unfinished cement basement. I love it. It's 6 minutes, and I just love that do, do, And like, it just stays constant the whole way through. I love when bands do that.
Stay constant. Makes you feel safer in the world because your life is so erratic.
It's punishing. It's unrelenting. Last thing here. It's Courtney Barnett, who's got a new album coming out in May. Mark, it's the year of no bummers. It's the year I love Courtney Barnett. I'm deciding on it. I'm coming in. You know, I was sort of middle of the road on that last album. I didn't love it as much as I probably should have. But I'm ready to love Courtney Barnett this year. That's Nameless Faceless. That's Courtney Barnett. Courtney Barnett. The album's out in May.
I'm excited. Courtney Barnett is cool.
Can you do me a favor, Mark? Do you have the opportunity to watch the music video right now?
Yeah, I can do that. Sure.
Google it real quick and watch it, because this is going to be a music video in the vein of Take Me Out by Franz Ferdinand and some other classic mid-2000s music videos.
No kidding.
If it's amazing.
Sorry, you said Nameless?
Nameless Faceless.
All right. This is called Weekly Beats Reacts, our YouTube series. There's a lot happening in this music video.
I know. It's amazing. So many cats.
Oh my God. There's a lot of cats. They have human lifts. It's a lot.
Yep. It's the year of no bummers. It's the year of loving Courtney Barnett.
Wow. I'm excited. I want to come around. I didn't dislike the last album, but I definitely wasn't all the way on the hype train either.
Same. Same. Yeah. So this is the year that she is top notch.
Yes.
All right. I think that'll do it.
For this.
Oh, that was an episode.
Yeah, I feel energized after that. It's finally it's out.
Well, let's get re-energized for next week, Mark. I think it's my pick.
It's definitely your pick.
All right. So I want you to throw back to about a year and a half ago. Okay. It's August of 2016.
Oh, no.
You and I had a conversation about a certain album
that
I didn't listen to. That I ended up lost in the desert in...
That's right.
I don't know where it was, but there was a camel involved.
Yeah.
And that was an album called Teens of Denial by Car Seat Headrest.
That's true.
And of all of the episodes we've done, here we are, episode 95. You know, we're coming close to 100 here. That is maybe the greatest regret I have.
In life or just in the show?
In this, on the podcast. Is not fully giving that album a shot.
Wow.
So you know what, Mark? 2018, the year of no bummers and the year of redemption, baby. Here we go. Car Seat Headrest is back with a remastering, a re-recording, essentially, of their very first album, Twin Fantasy. And I want to give this a shot. I want to give us a listen and talk about it on the show next week. And I will listen to this thing.
Yes, it'd be hilarious if you didn't, though.
I know. Just the Car Seat Headrest thing. It'd be just to show up and not listen to the album and try and talk about it.
Like right before we record, you tell me, sorry, man, but I got something to tell you. I don't really have time.
I'm lost in the desert again.
Oh, God. He's a camel. I don't know.
So let's do that, huh? Twin Fantasy. You down for that?
I listened to the first track of the original album and the new one, and I'm going to tell you right now, this sounds amazing. It sounds
cool.
Like unlike anything I've ever heard. As far as
wow. Like, another bold statement coming from you.
I mean, just as far as a rock project goes, I've never heard an artist just be like, here's like 10 to 15 years of my growing and my skill to express myself. I'm going to say the first thing I said again. It's something else.
It's a pretty cool idea.
Yep.
The billboard has spoken, and so we've got God's Plan, Perfect, Finesse, Havana, Rockstar running down the top five. We're going to go all the way down to number six this week for New Rules by Dua Lipa.
Okay.
I don't know that one, but we're going to listen to it next week on the show.
I'm down for that. I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Well, Mark, since we do have just five episodes till the big 100, shall we maybe give a little teaser for what's coming as Weekly Beats approaches episode 100 here?
That's right. We are going to live off the land and wear Justin Timberlake's skin.
For an entire year.
Jesus, I'm not ready for that.
We will become him.
I feel like I'm his.
No, I think the plan is for us to do sort of a retrospective episode and talk a lot about other important albums and songs that we haven't on the show before. Maybe do a little bit of list making like we love to do. We've got some ideas we're kicking around, and I don't know if the ideas are totally finalized yet, but I guess look forward to the end of March when we'll be releasing episode 100.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited.
Can you believe we made it this far, Mark?
I don't believe it.
100 episodes.
I actually think this is not true.
Okay. It's possible. I read a great article recently that says, like, our reality is just totally a fiction.
Elon Musk thing.
Yeah. I mean, let's just launch cars into space. Why not? What do we have to lose?
Yeah, it's not surprising that the man who had a car drive into outer space and back thinks that reality isn't real. It's no surprise the person who did that is able to be like, this isn't happening. I'm not this person,
this
right?
This can't possibly be true.
Is this happening?
Well, anyways, drop us a 5-star review in that iTunes podcast feed. That would be the best. Hit us up on our social medias otherwise. We love to hear from you folks. It's been a stuffed couple weeks here. We'll return next week with Car Seat Headrest and Dua Lipa. Until next time, play that outro music!